You expecting somebody?
Yes.
Oh, Your Excellency!
Oh, thank you, Margaret. That must be my cue. Hello, and welcome to Notes from the Aisle Seat, the podcast that covers the arts in Northern Chautauqua County, sponsored by the 1891 Fredonia Opera House. My name is Tom Laughlin, and I'm your host as we bring you news and information about arts events at the Opera House and around the region, as well as interviews with artists and creators across the county. We have to start this episode with a bit of disappointing news. One of the most anticipated events at the 1891 Fredonia Opera House for some time now has been the concert featuring pianist George Winston. Unfortunately, due to COVID-19 concerns and out of an abundance of caution, Mr. Winston has canceled the remainder of his tour dates for the year, and this includes his performance date at the Opera House. At this time, no rescheduled date is anticipated. If you have a ticket for the concert, you can contact the Opera House box office at 716-679-1891 or email them at operahouse, all one word, at fredopera.org for refund information. That's the opening passage from Night on Bald Mountain by Modest Mussorgsky. You'll be able to hear two of his works this fall, one at the Opera House and one at the Rockefeller Arts Center. Autumn brings with it a resurgence of the art scene as area venues gear up for their fall seasons. The Michael C. Rockefeller Arts Center on the campus of SUNY Fredonia is one of those venues. Also a victim of the pandemic shutdown since March of 2020, longtime RAC Director Jefferson Westwood is now gearing up to reopen with a full schedule of events for the fall. I spoke with Jefferson about what's coming up at the RAC. Hey, Jefferson, good to have you on the program. I hope you're doing well and getting set for a good year, yes?
Yes, thank you so much for having me, Tom. We took an 18-month intermission. And now we're open again. We've been open for almost a week. We had a great kickoff with a Beatles tribute band called Here Comes the Sun, and we're up and rolling. It feels very good to be back in the saddle again, I tell you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I can imagine. Can you just give me a quick review of how you got through the 18 months of pandemic? Because I know you were closed and you probably had a couple of virtual performances. How did you get through that?
Well, for one thing, most of my staff and I were telecommuting. I'm considered high risk almost just due to my age, but we got through it. And our two major offerings, because the POP series, DFT Communication POP series, is our flagship program. And for Christmas, we did a virtual 60-minute Christmas concert, jazz standards, popular tunes, recorded by our own alumni.
I watched that.
Came out really well. It was many of the same people who had been here in fall of 19 for our 50th anniversary celebration, which was probably the best show, according to Dennis Hefner, that he'd ever seen when he was here. Many people felt the same way. So they just chose their own songs, made their own videos, sent them to me, by a Dropbox or Google Drive, and I edited and put it all together and introduced it and did some credits and stuff like that. So I became a virtual online movie maker. And then that came off so well. And we probably had more people view that than would have been here in person had we done a live show.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, we had 800 or 900 views on Facebook and another several hundred on YouTube. And you figure a lot of those are people watching from home with two people on the sofa.
Right.
I know my kids watched it that way. One family in Colorado and one in Brooklyn, so it gave us a wider reach. And then we did a very similar thing with our own students, as is traditional for commencement eve. And we called it the Inspiration of Broadway. And we worked with a dozen students and a bunch of their collaborators. And again, they chose their own song. I had some suggestions. They all tied in with the theme of, you know, perseverance and determination. And we're in this together and we'll get through it together. So it was sort of a thematic program idea to go along with COVID. And that also had a huge number of views. And those were both very long term. I mean, they took the whole semester to put those together.
I'm sure you probably got a lot of views from places in the country and from people who had never seen that kind of work before from the RAC.
That's right. It really gave us a wide reach and people could share it. When you're on Facebook, people will like it and share it with friends and stuff like that. So that was gratifying, but I'm glad to be back doing it live again, which is what, you know, my profession and yours when you were still working was all about, the joy of live performance.
Yes, I still don't think there's anything that can beat that. I've seen a lot of recorded performances over the course of the pandemic, and every time I watch one, I just always get that something missing feeling. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Yes, it's not mm-hmm. live. So now that you're up and running and you've got a season going and you've got a season planned, why don't you give us a sort of an overview of what we can expect to see this fall semester over at the...
Yeah, sure. Well, we have at the end of October, we've actually expanded our pop series and we're going to be presenting the Western New York Chamber Orchestra with what we call a Halloween spooktacular pops concert instead of spectacular, spooktacular. And it'll be Night on Bald Mountain and the theme from the Harry Potter movies by John Williams and some music by Thriller by Michael Jackson and a bunch of other classical tunes that have that sort of spooky feeling to them. March of the Gallows is by, I can't remember, Berlioz maybe, that it's a whole symphonic program. It's going to be family friendly. We'll have a costume contest with secret judges roaming the hall looking for outstanding costumes with special prizes. End of semester, we're doing our annual Christmas show. This was originally scheduled for 2 years ago, and it is a group of brothers and sisters, five of them. They're called the Five Browns. It's a piano quintet. So we'll have five polished Steinway grand pianos on stage. They are Steinway artists. They're the only group of five siblings ever admitted concurrently or simultaneously at the Juilliard School in New York, which, you know, is the top school for classical music mm-hmm. training. And a couple of years ago, they came out with a Christmas album. And so it'll be things from the Nutcracker. And they do a wonderful version of Leroy Anderson's Sleigh Ride, one of my favorite tunes. And that should be a lot of fun. And theater department is also up and going. They're rehearsing now. They're going to do a show called The Wild Party, which was a big hit off Broadway. And Jen Cody, if any of your listeners were around 35 or so years ago, she's one of our most illustrious musical theater grads. And she's been on many, many Broadway and touring shows and regional shows. She was in the original production, and she is coming back as our guest choreographer.
Oh, how nice.
I haven't gotten to see her yet, but I really hope to intersect because she's a wonderful person, in addition to just being extremely talented. And if people don't have our entertainment guide, they can call the ticket office and get a copy of it because, you know, the School of Music is probably doing 20 public performances in King Concert Hall alone. Don't have time to run through them all, but by the end of this month, September, we will be having lots of activities because everybody's had time to rehearse now.
Right. Do you get when you go around the Rockefeller Arts Center, do you get that sense of things happening?
Oh, yes. I was here occasionally during the pandemic. It was dead. Now it's sometimes getting distractingly noisy because one of the brass ensembles decided that they would spend their beautiful, you know, fall afternoon directly above my head on the concrete plaza. So we sort of had some background music that we weren't planning on. But that's fun to see the place so active.
You've got your Kaleidoscope series coming up too. Is that
That's
right?
That's true. We have one event this fall and one in the spring. This fall, we're bringing Mark Neiser back. He is essentially a comedian juggler type of guy and does all kinds of special effects, including the audience will be handed 3D glasses, and he does some of his show with 3D projections with him juggling things that glow in the dark. So it's a very sort of high-tech show. And for that, we will be putting extra space between seats. We won't sell to 100% of capacity. Everybody does have to wear a mask. That is the basic rule and COVID protocol for everything on campus. Any member of the public going inside any building and all faculty and staff have to be masked. We are also running the HVAC, the heating, ventilating, cooling system, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So we have constant air circulation. At least 40% of it is fresh air from outside, mm-hmm. and we've installed new filters called MERV 13. They're the high efficiency. They get rid of the tiniest little particles that might be carrying COVID or any other virus. So that was an upgrade we did soon after the pandemic hit, although we had to wait a while to get them because everybody else in the world wanted them too, and they were on back order for a while.
Right.
But they're here and functional now, and I think people appreciate what we're doing.
So that'll work out good because people can feel safe coming to the concerts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Great. That's wonderful. Well, is there anything else coming up for yourself that you'd like the audience to take into account or know about?
Well, I want to give a preview of the end of season, and maybe we can talk about this on a future podcast, but I'm so delighted to be working again with Nick Weiser, our relatively new, I think he's in his fourth or fifth year, director of jazz studies. And for our commencement eve show in the middle of May, we're doing a program with his student big band and student singers and hopefully some dancers entitled Salute to the Big Apple. So it'll be everything from Take the A Train to Harlem Air Shaft to Give My Regards to Broadway to East Side, West Side, all around the town, Pennsylvania 65,000 by the Glenn Miller Orchestra. You know, there's over 3,000 songs and compositions that have been written about New York City or one of its landmarks. It's a challenge to just, and many of them have had big band arrangements done of them. It's a challenge to come up with just a list of the 20, but we're working on that. We were going to do it in spring of 20, but the pandemic shut us down. And fortunately, all of the students returned their music, so I don't have to buy it over again.
Oh, that's nice.
Because we let them take it home thinking we might be back in session, you know, we might be returning.
Right.
But then we didn't. The rest of that semester was long distance. And that is a labor of love on my part. I really enjoy working with my fellow faculty members, as I did with you. You directed South Pacific for me many years ago. For mm-hmm.
A couple of others too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They're always fun. Yeah. That's great, Jefferson. Good. I'm glad to see that you're up and running. Glad to hear that things are going well over there, and knowing that the audiences will be safe to come to the shows. I think that's also, you know, a great pieces of news all around. Hopefully I'll be able to talk to you later on in the semester.
And I just want to say, I admire what you're doing. I think it's a great idea. I've been a big fan of Rick Davis ever since his first year at the Opera House. I was on the founding board, and he's doing a great job. And all I can say is I wish I had the idea of a regional podcast about arts and entertainment activities in our area. Rick beat me to it, but I support that place strongly.
Good. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm sure Rick will be glad to hear that. Listen, you take care. Have a good season, and I'll be talking to you soon.
Thanks, Tom. Bye-bye.
Okay. Thanks, Jefferson. Bye-bye. Well, you know what that music means, don't you?
Yes, it's time for the premiere of the Live at the Met series at the 1891 Fredonia Opera House. Joining me now to talk about the Live at the Met series for the fall, as well as the opening production of Boris Godunov, is Dr. Robert Strauss. Alongside his performance career as a versatile tenor, Dr. Strauss is a senior lecturer on the voice faculty at the SUNY Fredonia School of Music, where he also serves as the producer of the annual Hillman Opera, which is coming up later this fall.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for joining me for this little overview of the Live at the Met.
Well, thanks for asking me.
Yeah, you bet. So, listen, what I'd like to get from you, and we'll have a little conversation about sort of what I consider to be a little overview of the season. There are five operas we're looking at. We're stretched out to the end of January. And I'm amazed by the variety of the titles. I know you've had a chance to look at them. And the variety's really, really struck me.
Yeah, I think the Met is doing a good job of, you know, following suit with all arts organizations to be more diverse in their presentations, while paying homage to the standard repertoire as well.
Yeah, I really was quite fascinated when I look at the scale of things. I mean, I don't know that Boris Godunov is a particularly often done piece, but you know, that's certainly starting off with something sung in Russian to begin with.
Yeah, sure enough. Well, when you have a bass like René Papa, I think you do these things for sure.
And he's the world's leading Boris right now, as I understand it.
I think so. He's been doing it for 15 years, so we think that he'd probably be getting pretty good at it by now.
For sure. We'll come back to Boris Godunov in just a bit, but let me talk quickly about the others that are on tap here for the season. The first one is Terence Blanchard's Fire Shut Up in My Bones, which is a musical adaptation of Charles Blow's novel. Have you had a chance to look at that or see anything about that?
I haven't, but I'm excited to experience it.
Yeah, so am I, because I it's an all black cast, I believe. And right. That's a first for the Met, obviously. I also am fascinated by, you know, the fact that the composer Terence Blanchard has won a Grammy for his jazz compositions and things like that. Really quite a diverse collection of artists in that show.
Yeah, I think it's going to be exciting.
Yeah, is just, you know, something I think that audiences should really make sure they get a chance to look at. The other one that's pretty fascinating to me, and I found this to be a theme, was when I looked at Matthew O'Coin's Eurydice, mm-hmm. There's a lot of crossover from the world of theater. And in fact, this one and also I believe the Rigoletto have quite a crossover in the theater world. Three people who are responsible for Eurydice: Matthew O'Coin, Sarah Rule, the playwright, and the director, I think Mary Zimmerman, are all MacArthur geniuses, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, I think that's exciting too. And you know, we haven't talked about our Fredonia connection necessarily, but that's one of the things that I love that we do here. You know, people who primarily are theater directors experiencing what's going on in the world and bringing their knowledge to the opera world and experience. And that opera is challenging itself to be acknowledging what's going on in the world and be better theater and be just as interesting as everything else that's going on.
Well, they take, you know, with the Met doing Fire Shut Up in My Bones, then they go to Eurydice. And I believe that the way that O'Coin wrote that was to give us a perspective from Eurydice's point of view rather than Orpheus's point of view.
Right, which is really cool, especially considering it's such a longstanding operatic title. You know, the very first operas were Orpheus and Eurydice. So the fact that we continue but have a modern take on it, perhaps, or a different perspective.
Yeah, the perspective of Sarah Rule has this great balance between remembrance and forgetfulness as the characters weave in and out of what they remember and what they forget.
Yeah. No, that sounds fascinating, because Eurydice is often sort of a living prop. And so... I'm excited to hear what she has to say or what she thinks.
Well, it has that famous, I believe they transferred it over to the opera, because when Sarah Ruhl did the original play, I think in 2015, Eurydice, there was a famous scene that Eurydice, as she travels to the underworld, actually goes in an elevator, which rains on the inside. And that's the river of forgetfulness. And then when she comes onto the stage, she's doesn't remember anything.
Oh, my goodness. Well, yeah. The technical director will have lots of fun with that.
They always do.
Right.
That's quite a challenge. Then we've got Massenet's Cinderella. You've done that before, haven't you?
We did. We just did it in 2019. I'm happy to say that we won first place in a National Opera Association collegiate production competition for it. So, and I love the work. I think it's really, really great.
What do you like most about it?
You know, maybe it was our telling, but I feel like it's really a contemporary idea of two people rather than the Disney version of Cinderella. Mm-hmm. It's two people who are looking at their circumstances and finding that they don't quite fit in with what they expected, and looking to see what else is possible in the world and how they can be their truest selves. And yeah, so it's both the Prince and Cinderella.
At the same time, I think that you were directing that. I was directing La Cenerentola up in Buffalo.
Which I loved, by the way, I was going to tell you.
Oh, thank you. But I was really fascinated that the two of us were actually doing the Cinderellas, each of the Cinderella operas.
It was accidental cross promotion, but I think it worked.
Yeah, it did. It was a lot of fun. And then finally, at the end of the season, we get Rigoletto, which is an incredibly tragic story. It's another Broadway crossover. Bartlett Sher is going to direct it. And I think there's something between Bartlett Sher and the scene designer and also the costume designer. There's something like 8 Tony Award winners connected to that show. 8 of them.
Great. That'll be exciting.
Oh, it's really going to be exciting, I think. So I think we're looking at a very exciting season. People should really come down and make sure they catch these, because I think these Live at the Met performances are really terrific. The first one coming up, of course, is Boris Godunov on Saturday, October the 9th, and it's at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And are there any particular parts of that opera that you think stand out as being unique? I know that Mussorgsky was a Russian romanticist and right. hung around with a number of the composers of the day. It has an interesting history.
Doesn't it? Well, I think, in the history of music, that's an interesting time period as nationalism starts to rear its head, that people are wanting to incorporate their own national music and their own national stories into what they're writing. So, of course, it's a Russian story written by a Russian composer, which is so fascinating. And things like the broadening of the orchestra with more brass and more percussion. So, of course, you need a really sturdy voice like René Papa to even be able to project over the orchestra. But I think that's really fascinating, and the fact that there were these different revisions along the way with a state censoring the original version, ostensibly because it didn't have a large enough female role.
Yeah, that's what I read today. Yeah, and I believe the Met is doing actually the original version, the 1869 version. So I don't think there's a female in the cast, as I recall.
Yeah, well, not in a major role for sure. Right. Yeah. So right. I think that's interesting to see what his original ideas were.
And then there was an adaptation of it. I mean, in the turn of the century. The name of the composer escapes me at the moment.
Rimsky-Korsakov.
Thank you, Rimsky-Korsakov, who did a different kind of orchestration for it. And it took that long to actually get its first production, like in London and New York and so on and so forth.
Yeah. No, it's very interesting. That may have to do with nationalism as well. Maybe in London they didn't want to do a Russian story or some such. You never know.
I think there's at least 4 or 5 versions that it went through, with people adapting it and so on and so forth. Even after Mussorgsky's death, they kept looking at it and redoing it. And I just would love to be able to, put together like 5 different little passages and see how they're different. But the story is typically Russian, though. Boris goes through a whole bunch of guilt, but at the same time, he's perfectly happy to kill the young person who should be the czar just to become the czar.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I don't know if that's quintessentially Russian or not, but
Characters are Russian. How's that?
Okay, yeah. How hard is it to sing in Russian, Rob?
Well, if you speak Russian, probably not at all. There are certainly some sounds in the language that aren't in, you know, we learn English, Italian, French, and German at first,
right?
At least in this country. And so Russian absolutely has some interesting things with the hard and the soft versions of consonants. Some of it works against good singing, like the hard L. That makes it difficult to sing. But I think with anything, once you have lived in it enough with good coaches, you can master it.
Yeah, it seems to be very, very difficult thing to do. And perhaps I'm not sure if that's one of the reasons why it's not done so much by numbers of people. It's probably very difficult to find, first of all, a bass, and second of all, a bass who can sing Russian.
A bass and a bass who can sing Russian. And it's just also needing to go outside of our comfort zone, sort of as we talked about with the diversity of the repertoire. It's like, well, we can sing in Spanish, we can sing in Czech, we can sing in Russian, we can learn to do these things. Or do we just want to go with the tried and true, wonderful works like Rigoletto, but it's in Italian. So,
yeah. Well, listen, thanks. Thank you for showing up and coming, doing the interview with me. I really do appreciate it. I wish I had a little more time to get into a little more detail. But before we go, talk a little bit about the Hillman Opera, the upcoming Hillman Opera. Let's get an advance on that. I'll probably try and get something a little more detail later on. But for now, let's give us a taste.
Well, November 12th, 13th, and 14th in Robert W. Marvel Theater on the campus of SUNY Fredonia. The Hillman Opera is putting on its 60-something production. I don't have that number in the top of my head. Il Matrimonio Segreto, which is the secret marriage. It's a comic opera. The title means secret marriage. It's a romp. It lies between Mozart and Rossini stylistically. The composer is Tima Rosa, if I didn't just say that. We could also dedicate a whole session to producing an opera in the time of COVID, but I think it would be me sighing, moaning, crying, and screaming. But we're doing everything to keep our performers and our audiences safe, but still have a really great artistic experience. And it's going great. Dan Lanzian is the stage director, David Rudge is the conductor, and Kissel is our coach and rehearsal pianist and I'm the producer. So it's a really great team.
Oh,
and
great.
A really great cast.
Rob, thanks a lot for coming on. I appreciate it. Good luck with the opera. And I'll be talking to you once again.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Rob. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Once again, my thanks to Dr. Strauss for coming on to the podcast. Let's listen to a short excerpt from Boris Godunov. This is from the coronation scene. Boris Godunov kicks off the Live at the Met series on Saturday, October 9th at 1 p.m. For the Live at the Met series, two subscription options are available, a full 10-opera subscription and a flexible 8-opera ticket subscription. The full subscription provides one ticket to each of the 10 operas in the series. The flexible subscription provides 8 tickets that can be used however you want, one at a time to 8 different operas, all at once for 8 people, or anything in between. General admission seats are $20, $18 for Opera House members, and $10 for students. For more information, call the Opera House box office at 716-679-1891.
Anything further, Father?
Anything further, Father? That can't be right. Isn't it anything further?
Why, yes, there is. The Fredonia Marxonia. An on-and-off tradition in Fredonia since 1987, the Fredonia Marxonia has been a celebration of all things Marx Brothers. At one time, the Fredonia Marxonia was held at the Opera House,
but has since been housed under the auspices of the Reed Library at SUNY Fredonia. The keeper of the flame has been Cindy Yoakum, who is a reference librarian. This year's festival is, like last year's, a virtual one, and I caught up with Cindy for a few minutes to get a preview of the 2021 event.
Cindy, welcome to the podcast. It's so wonderful to have you on here.
Well, thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
That's great. Over the years, of course, I've known about the Fredonia Marksonia event, and I can't even say that phrase most of the time without laughing and smiling. Fredonia Marksonia, because it's so wonderful, and I know it's been going on a long time, actually longer than most people realize. So can you give us a brief history of the event, how it got started, where it is today?
Sure. In 1987. A student here at SUNY Fredonia, a marketing student named Doug Canham, had the idea to start this based on, he discovered that the Marx Brothers movie, Duck Soup, set in the fictional country of Fredonia, with two E's, and it's from 1933. And he said, nobody's doing something about this. Why can't we make something of this? So he led the effort to do just that. He went to the administration and it took a bit of effort, but he started this festival, and it's this Fredonia Marksonia Festival. And it continued from 1987 to 1990. It did go away for a bit of time, and it came back in 2009 with the support of Doug Canham. And then from 2010 onward, it's been continued through the support of the Hahn Family Fredonia Marksonia Fund of the Fredonia College Foundation. And since 2014, the materials and the responsibility for planning activities has been in the library. And that's how I became involved. And that's the story as of today.
Oh, good. Yes, I remember I started it, I believe my first year at Fredonia was 1988, and I was so pleased to see that. And, right. You know, I don't know that most people, if they get an email from me, they'll notice my tagline
yes.
at the bottom. It's always Hail, Hail, Fredonia, Land right. of the Brave. And I've been doing that since I got emails.
That's
so.
Great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's my connection to the whole event. Sure. So tell us a little bit about the virtual events for this coming event. I believe it's coming up pretty soon, right?
That's right. October 1st, that's Friday at 7:00 p.m. It's a live stream done by a remarkably wonderful, talented, creative gentleman called, his name is Noah Diamond, with a resume of Marx Brothers work that I don't know that we have the time for this, Tom. He's an author, performer. He brought back to the stage the Marx Brothers' first Broadway show from 1924 called I'll Say She Is, to the off-Broadway stage in 2016 in New York City. He's going to present a virtual program called There's Nothing Like Liberty, the Marx Brothers in America. That's a sequel to last year's virtual program that he did, Home Again, the Marx Brothers in New York City. The story with that a bit is that Noah Diamond was here in person in 2017 with the theme of Broadway and the Marx Brothers. And we were going to have the theme of New York City and the Marx Brothers anyway in 2020. But when COVID hit, we couldn't bring Noah or have any in-person activities that year. So his technological skill and expertise allowed him to create this virtual program last year. And it's still available on YouTube, by the way. I think it's just beautiful and creative and takes the story of the Marx Brothers in New York City, their hometown, where they performed on stage, and it just presents so many aspects. It's wonderful, I think. And so this year, thinking ahead, we thought maybe we were going to try to bring Noah back here in person, but thought maybe we better not. So we're going again with the virtual. And so he's expanding the scope of this for this year. So we're going to look at the Marx Brothers coast to coast, from New York City and onward across the country. So he's working on that, and he's also assembled the contributions from other folks who are expert in their fields or have insights into the brothers' experiences around the country. I must say, Noah keeps me, I'm very happy. He keeps me in suspense along with the rest of the people who are going to see this for the first time on October 1st. So when I kind of treasure that element of anticipation for the program. So that's the story with this year's. I hope that people can watch that. And by the way, we're also going to have last year we didn't have any in-person or activities or display, but this year we're going to have a small display also in Reed Library here at the college with our art contest contributions from 2020 and this year as well. So they'll be on display, and I hope folks, if they have an opportunity, can stop and see that. And by the way, any details about that and links to these programs, both Home Again, last year's, and the one that's coming up, they're available on our Fredonia Marksonia website. And the easiest way to get there, frankly, is just Google Fredonia Marksonia, except use two E's in Fredonia.
Right. I did that actually. You come up as the first search on Google. So
good. That's what we want.
I figured that's what you wanted.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I really enjoyed the event. I mean, I think the Fredonia Marksonia has always been a very popular to me anyway, because I'm a big Marx Brothers fanatic, actually. I enjoy watching their movies. Duck Soup is one of my top favorites. I think between Duck Soup and Horse Feathers, sometimes I can't decide which one I like best.
Sure.
Because, you know, Horse Feathers is so wonderful at skewering academic life, and Duck Soup is so wonderful at skewering political life. They both tickle my funny bone in amazing ways.
That's right. Oh, and one time, may I add just one more thing about
absolutely
support for Noah's program. I mentioned the Hahn Family Fredonia Marksonia Fund that supports Fredonia Marksonia in general, but for Noah Diamond's presentation, it is also supported by the Carnahan Jackson Humanities Fund,
right,
also of the Fredonia College Foundation, and we're very appreciative for that.
Yes, and I'll personally thank them too, because I think that the work that they're doing to be able to keep that thing going is really great. Cindy, thanks for the time. I appreciate hearing about your enthusiasm. I know you've been enthused about this project for many years now, so it was great to be able to have you on and talk about it, and I hope that people tune in to the virtual presentation on October 1st this year. Yes. Thanks a lot, Cindy.
Thank you, Tom.
That's it for this week's episode. As Harpo Marx plays us out, I want to once again thank this week's guests, Mr. Jefferson Westwood, Dr. Robert Strauss, and Ms. Cindy Yoakum. Notes from the Aisle Seat is a presentation of the 1891 Fredonia Opera House in Fredonia, New York. For more information on the Opera House's events, call the box office at 716-679-1891 or email at operahouse@fredopera.org. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode of Notes from the Aisle Seat. I'm Tom Laughlin, and until then, be safe out there and be kind to one another.